There was one day where I'm like, I remember like sitting on a rock and vomiting. And she's like over on the side doing like one-handed push-ups. And I'm like, we're not friends.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Distance Hiker Podcast. With me, your host, Matthew. It is, as always, a pleasure, an absolute pleasure to have you on the show and to have your ears for the next hour or so while I chat with another guest all about their story and, of course, long distance hiking. On today's show, I have got Reetha Charette, who blogs under the name and goes on Instagram under the name of the Roaming Nanny. Her trail name being Pikachu. And you can find her website at roamingnanny.com, which has an absolute wealth of information about getting into hiking. It's a really, really good website. And that's exactly what Reetha is. She's a long-distance hiker and she's a writer. And she works through her writing to advocate for empowering women to get outdoors. Reetha had a really interesting start to her hiking journey as she climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and the rest of that history is laid out in the podcast for you to listen to and to enjoy. We talk about her walk along the AT, some of the differences about hiking in the UK and abroad. She talks at large about hiking in the USA. She is my first American guest, I'd just like to add, recalling stories and experiences from her time spent on the trail and in nature. And a key piece of this podcast, which kind of comes towards the middle, three quarters of the way through, is talking about women and women's empowerment in the outdoors, which is really interesting. And I ask a few questions as well around that, because I think it's an important conversation and we really enjoy getting into that. And that's very much it for the podcast. It's a really good episode, in my opinion. Reetha is super mad enthusiastic about what she believes in and what she loves doing, which is getting on the trail, writing and advocating for more women to get outdoors and enjoy nature. And that comes across so much in the show. So I hope you really enjoy this episode. It's a great listen. And as usual, please let me know what you think just by dropping me a DM or reviewing on Apple or giving us a follow on Spotify. But without further ado, I present to you Reetha Charette, the Roaming Nanny on the Distance Hiker Podcast. Other than having the mic too close. Anyway, me aside, thank you for coming on. I listened to you on...
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome. I listened to you on the Hiker Podcast with Andy.
Oh, I love Andy. He's so fantastic.
I love his podcast and I've listened to a few. I say only a few, probably about four. Yours was one of them. And I love the episode. And I just, after I listened to it, I was like, I'm going to contact you because I want you on my podcast. So here I am.
Well, thank you so much.
No, you're welcome. So when you said yes, I was like, yeah, cool. Can't wait to have you on. And you were available at a time that seems to work for both of us. So worked out nicely. But yeah, I don't even know what I liked about the show, your episode with him. It just came across as really genuine and you were just really open about everything. And I thought that was really important.
I learned at a young age that I'm a really bad liar, so I don't.
And it came across. There's nothing held back and that's rare. So I thought, oh, cool. If I could have half the conversation with you that Andy's had with you, that'd be awesome. So here we are.
Yeah, I just don't have time for... Yeah. Not being myself.
Yeah.
It's really boring. Like when you meet people and they're like putting on an air, like you can just tell.
You can tell.
And I don't have time for those people. I got too many trails to hike, too much outdoorsy shit to do, and too many cool people to hang out
totally.
With. So
yeah. Life's too short for not being yourself and trying to be someone else, isn't it, for everybody else? So I can advocate for that. Yeah.
The Hollywood does that enough for all of us, so I'm just going to skip it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, 100%. So I want to get into your story, if that's okay. Very much what I do here is I like to find interesting people where the commonality is hiking and then dive into stories. And you can share as much or as little of it as you want, but ultimately that's kind of the direction I go. Everything has a beginning. With most people, obviously, I'm going to go straight in and just say, where for you then did that interest in hiking begin? What's like your first experience of it? Or interest in the outdoors, perhaps, to be more broad?
Well, that the interest in the outdoors is an easy one, because I've been a Girl Scout since I was 5.
Oh, wow.
I'm a lifetime member of the Girl Scouts of the USA. Okay. And I mean, I was a volunteer after I graduated from high school for a really long time. Yeah. I was a volunteer when I first moved up here in Vermont. I had an older girl, like high school girl troop. Mm. We did a bunch of outdoorsy stuff, and there's just not as many Girl Scouts here as there used to be. And now I just live a life where I'm always moving around, and being like a leader for the Girl Scouts just doesn't work for my lifestyle, sadly, as much as I really, really love doing it. I've been a Girl Scout leader for 4 troops over the years of varying ages of girls. Yeah. And like some of my girls now are like graduating from college, and it's makes me feel real old. but I've been a Girl Scout since I was 5. Yeah, we weren't like your standard like cookies and crafts Girl Scout troop. Okay. Like we did that, and I sold a boatload of Girl Scout cookies. Did Girl Scouts sell Girl Guides sell cookies in the UK?
Right. My knowledge on this is somewhat limited. I've never seen anybody sell cookies in that context.
Then it's
what are they called? Brownies. They go up to something else, so we don't call them Girl Scouts. For whatever reason.
Yeah. So in the UK, they're Girl Guides.
Yeah. There's like brownies is because you have boys is like Cubs, Beavers, Scouts, and girls, it's like brownies, something, and then Girl Guides. Yeah. So it's slightly different. But no, selling cookies is not a thing.
Okay. So I sold a lot of Girl Scout cookies because when I sold Girl Scout cookies, I went to Girl Scout camp. Ah,
so is that a like growing prerequisite up, to go to camp? Is you have to sell the cookies to fund
It's not, but I just grew up in a poor family. Like we didn't have a lot of money. So my way of affording to go to Girl Scout camp was to sell cookies. Okay. And camp, I guess, was one of the first places that I was in the outdoors that it was like camp is like my safe place. Yeah. It was the first place where I could like really be myself and not get made fun of, because I was a weird kid. And I got teased a lot in school, and I was also very small. So like I got picked on for being tiny, which is never good. Like being picked on for the size of your body, no matter how big or small it is. And so camp was always my really safe place. And I went every summer, and I actually got to be the camp director for the Girl Scout camp that I went to as a kid for 4 years. Wow. So I spent 17 summers in total at the same camp.
Oh, amazing.
So like I know that like camp isn't a thing all over the world. Yeah.
We do have a bit of it here now. Yeah. It's crept over.
I love that, because camp is like such a great safe place for kids, no matter where you come from, to like go and be away from your parents and be in a safe place, and you can be yourself. Like you can reinvent yourself if you want to and be the person that you truly are and not worry about everybody judging you. So I guess like maybe that's where the outdoors made me feel like always safe. Mm. Like I've never been afraid to be outside. Yeah. Like a lot of other kids, and then some women have, and I really like want to dive into that later.
Yeah, for sure.
About how like women don't feel safe in the outdoors, and I've never had that experience. Luckily,
yeah, I definitely want to get into the women in the outdoors. I've got some questions to ask you about that, but so I'll carry on with your story if that's all right for a bit.
Oh, of course, yeah. Girl Scout camp was a really big deal, and I'm really good at starting a campfire. I learned how to do that at a young age.
That's the best feeling,
isn't
it?
Always like a
when you first light. It's a great feeling. It's so
and I love
primitive.
Teaching
too. It's great. I've taught it and I've obviously done it. And when you get that going, it's just the most magical feeling. It's addictive.
It's like I made this. Yeah. It's like anytime you get to make anything, regardless of what it is, whether you work on cars and you like rebuild this beautiful car, or you know you have kids and you're like that's been your dream to like be a mom or a dad for so long. Like when you get to see that thing that you've worked hard for, like it's such a great feeling.
It's a consuming feeling. It's wonderful.
So, I was a Girl Scout all through school. And, then I didn't, when I was in college, when I was at university, I didn't really spend a lot of time in the outdoors as much as I used to. And I kind of like dove back into the outdoors when I moved up to Vermont, where I live now. And, I decided on a whim that I was going to climb Mount Kilimanjaro to kind of like get over my divorce. Okay. Yeah, didn't know how tall it was.
Yeah, sure.
When I how tall is it? I'm going to climb this mountain.
Is it 4,000 and something? We do meters here. It was going to be feet.
Oh, yeah. I don't know the meters. I know it's 19. I can look it up if you
That's
want.
That's all
right. It's like 19.3. Yeah. It's high. Yeah. And, you know, you get up there and it's hard to breathe. So, like, the fact that I was like, I'm going to climb this mountain and I don't know how tall it is, but we're going anyway.
Was that the first kind of long distance trek that you'd done then prior?
First one. And it's only like 7 days, so it's not really long. Hmm. And you don't like carry your own stuff. When you climb Mount Kilimanjaro, you don't just climb a mountain. You support the economy
of course.
All the towns that are at the base of it, because the way that they have the mountain regulated, that you go up with a team, so you have to have porters and cooks and guides. Mm. And I'm really lucky to now work for a company that does trips there. Okay. And like our guides, like it's a whole community that like supports a climb up the mountain. Mm. And it's not just one person. It's actually a really beautiful thing when you find like the right group of people to do it with, to see how much does one of these people really love.
Do you get to go out there? How often do you go out there now to do the walks?
I've done it, or I did it once for myself, and then I did it a second time in 2019. I don't do great at altitude personally. So a lot of the hikes that I lead aren't super high.
So what's your experience then with altitude? How did you fare doing Kilimanjaro the first time?
Oh, that was the first time I'd ever been at altitude, other than like being in Colorado. Sure. And in Colorado, I didn't really do tons of hiking when I was there. I did some, but they were shorter. I threw up every day. It was a really good look.
Yeah,
for me.
It's just the worst, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you have experience?
No, I don't. But I don't have experience at altitude at all. I love experience at altitude. It's on my list of things to do is to go do some sort of mountaineering. But throwing up every day just sounds horrific, especially when you're, you know, not near a toilet and, you know, walking and being outside. Yeah. It's just, not pleasant.
I threw up every day except for Summit Day.
Okay.
Which was great. Yeah. I felt like I like finally felt good the night of Summit night. I mean, I could, like, it was hard to breathe and there's less oxygen. And it was definitely, at that point in time, the hardest physical challenge I had ever had, but it was much better than not throwing up.
Of course. Yeah.
And I was in an all women's group, not the company that I work with now. And, I had this woman in the group, like, she was Canadian. And I was like, ooh, Canada, you're not really showing up, like, looking good on this hike, because she was not kind. Okay. And there was one day where I'm like, I remember like sitting on a rock and vomiting. Yeah. And she's like over on the side doing like one-handed push-ups.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, we're not friends.
Yeah.
That's not cool.
There's no empathy there for your situation.
And like, I don't expect people to be like, poor you. But like,
to do the total opposite of that is not cool at all. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not something that I would ever do to someone.
It's like to say, you're having a really bad time, but I'm finding this really easy. And doing like a display of that is just really vindictive.
Well, I mentioned this person because on Summit night, she was in front of me in our line. You like go up in a line and everyone has a headlamp on. And I'll never forget, like, you look up and you start at night, so you don't have to see how far you have to go, because it's far. Like, when you come back down, you're like, I just did that. Wow. And you see, like, the snake of headlamps just going up the mountain. It's really cool. Okay. And she's in front of me. She felt great the entire hike. She stopped. She threw up. And she turned around.
Oh, really?
And it was her and then myself and my adventure buddy, Laura, behind me. And I met her on that trip, and we've done 3 or 4 trips together now on different places around the world. And I turned, this woman walked away, and I turned around, I looked at Laura, and I was like, we are making it. Hell yeah. And that was just like huge motivation, because like, she felt great the whole time. Like, she didn't struggle at all. And the one time this woman struggled, it was over for her. Like, she didn't have the mental fortitude to make it happen.
You'd made that relationship and made that peace with the difficulty already.
Oh,
So 100%. You were going to make that summit because you were there already. You'd kind of done the hard work inside to get up there because you'd found it so difficult.
Yeah, unless someone had told me, because like the thing with going somewhere, especially at altitude with guides, is they know like all the signs of altitude sickness and like when people really need to turn
they
around.
Can tell.
So the only way I was turning around, unless someone was like, "You're gonna die, you should turn around," because I don't have a death wish.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not going up Everest. That's not my jam.
I'd never want to go up Everest. No.
I am thrilled for anyone that
does. Oh, for sure. Go for it.
I'm so impressed, but no, thank you. I will meet you at base camp and shake your hand when you're done.
I'm with you there. I would never, ever want to go up Everest. I do not look at that mountain and go, "I really want to climb that at some point in my life." There is absolutely no way on earth I want to do that.
And people, because I've done so many different hikes, we're like, "Oh, do you want to go up Everest?" Like, people just assume that all like hikers and people that climb mountains want to do that. And I think it kind of shocks people when those of us are like, "Yeah, no, thank you." It's a very strange thing. Yeah. Like, multiple people have asked me, like, "Oh, you're going to go?" I'm like, "No.
No, thanks. I'm good. I value my life a little bit."
But it is really cool that, like, the youngest woman, this season alone, the youngest woman ever has climbed it. The first all-black summit team climbed it. And a woman who is a Sherpa, she's done it many times. She's done it, like, 12 times now. So, like, it's been a really record-breaking summit season on Everest. I'm just not going to go.
Yeah, for sure. Like, having, people from, different ethnic groups and whatnot do it where that's not been done before is increasingly happening more and more and more. And
it's so awesome.
That is the best. And do you know what is, for me, even more exciting? And this is going to sound really weird, when people get mad about it. Because what that tells me is that
I don't get it,
but I'm also happy in some ways that there is that, because it says that it's challenging the status quo if people get cross about it. And I think it's difficult to see some of the comments that that you get when you see these things happen and people do these things, but it says to me that it's triggered somebody, and if it's triggered somebody, then it's challenging somebody, and that's not in itself a bad thing. So yeah, so many cool stuff happening in this space at the moment.
It challenges people, but like when people get triggered by it, it also is like, oh, it's still an issue.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I'm trying to get to. It gets to the heart of it. Yeah. It's, and it'd be great at some point for it to not trigger people, but the fact that it does says it's an issue, it's still there, and that person is pushing that boundary, which is what needs to happen. So whether I said that well or not, I don't know. But
I think it was
great. I'm excited when I see these kind of things come out, when I see articles of people pushing the boundaries in that way.
I just want to see all the people. I just want to see like more diversity in the outdoors.
For sure. Yeah.
I just don't understand why like it's a problem for some people. And like I see like I live in the US and, we've had our challenges throughout history, but like especially in the last few years, most places that started off predominantly white do, and it's just when I go outside, I love it when I see people that aren't straight white dudes.
100%. As a straight white dude, like, I like that as well. This was earlier this year. A group of Muslim hikers who I later worked out by looking on Facebook that they were a group called Muslim Hikers. That's their name. I saw them and I had to double take because, where I live, you don't see anyone, other than, that's not fair. You see very few people who are not white and male or female walking in the countryside near us. We make up the vast majority of hikers. So to see a whole group, there must have been about 25, 30 of them, just gearing up, going on a hike, was just awesome.
That's fantastic. We need
blew my
more
mind and
of that. In the
so
outdoors.
Excited to see that, and I dropped the guy the message afterwards. I saw you guys on the hill. Like, really nice to see that, and it was super excited. And actually, what made me sad though is that a couple of weeks, probably weeks, months, whatever, earlier, they'd had an article that had gone in one of our newspapers, and they put something on Twitter, and they just got attacked. Like, just the lack of understanding of that is crazy, but it's pushing that boundary, and that boundary needs to be pushed. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, it will become normalized, I hope.
I always say the phrase, "You can't be what you can't see." Yeah. So if you are a young Muslim child and you don't see any people that look like you hiking, you don't think I can hike too. And it's not just hiking. It's any outdoorsy, anything that you can think of. But when we're talking about the outdoors, you know, anyone hiking, biking.
Oh, for sure.
Kayak, yeah, not anything just hiking, like that. There's more to and it than that. It's all about representation, because the minute you see someone that looks like you accomplishing really badass stuff, or even just going out in the outdoors, that can inspire someone else to do it
totally.
Too. And you know, as a woman in the outdoors, granted, I'm a straight white woman. I'm still pretty much a majority, but still, go out hiking and I meet and I see little girls and I'm in all my kit and I've got my big backpack and I'm smelly. and they're like sitting down and like they acknowledge me or their adults acknowledge me. I always take time to stop and talk to them, because it is so important to look at the youth that is out getting there and like welcome them to do it with us. So I'm kind of like fast forwarding a little bit, I was on the Appalachian Trail last year and I met this little girl. Oh my God. I don't remember her name, but she was like 3 years old. She was a riot and she was with her aunt and her uncle and they had just done their first overnight. Out in the woods. And I was in Maryland and I was hiking north and they were hiking south. And, I was coming up a hill and I was a little tired and it was hot that day. So I stopped and I took a break and they walked up to me and I started chatting with them. And I wish I had him with me. On my shoulder, I always have a little Pikachu because my trail name is Pikachu. My Appalachian Trail support team, my really good friends, gave him to me to bring with me. And the little girl was like, oh, what's that? And I told her and we got into a whole conversation. She's like, I just did my first overnight. And I like made a point to like make it a big deal.
Biggest
wow, what did you like? What did you do? That's a big deal. She's like, what are you doing? Where are you going to sleep tonight? And I was like, well, I've been, and I told her that I was hiking the Appalachian Trail and I started in Georgia and I was going to Maine. And I told her aunt that like I was on Instagram. If they wanted to follow my trip, they could. And about a week later, I got a direct message from the aunt. And she said that, God, and like this chokes me up every time, like her niece on the way down, they passed a bunch of other Appalachian Trail hikers and day hikers. And she was like, do you, anytime she saw a thru hiker, do you know Pikachu? She's my friend.
Oh,
and she's doing the whole Appalachian Trail. And like, it was just so validating to be like, what I did was the right thing. And what I do is the right
100%.
thing.
So like, that's awesome. I mean, like you do these kinds of things, you know, and share experiences on the trail, and you know, you have an influence through what you do as well. And to get to one person, to reach that one person, it just makes it worthwhile.
I don't care how many people, it doesn't have to be
anything more.
No, it doesn't
matter. One person is good enough.
It can be one little girl who went out in the woods, and
that's so cool.
Because I just want to help. And the word inspire is like a hard word for me, because like I don't think of myself that way. But like, if I can encourage one person to go outside and be confident in the skills that they have, because they have skills, not because they don't know what they're doing. That's not safe. I always have to clarify, like, please don't go walking in the woods if you have no idea what's going on. But it just makes it all worthwhile, because more of us need to get outdoors, because the more of us that get outdoors, the more of us that are going to appreciate that and protect it, because it needs protecting.
It does need protecting. And I want to get back. I really want to dive into this, but I'm going to get through to your story a little bit more. So you did Kilimanjaro. You got down from that. You achieved it. You conquered the mountain, as we like to say here right now in the UK. We're getting all into that. So after Kilimanjaro, obviously, I'm assuming opened up the door for multi-day trekking for you. And you just saw the possibility of what your body can do, what you can achieve. Mm-hmm. Where did that steer you? Where did you go from that point?
Before I left Tanzania, my hiking buddy and I, so this actually starts the story of how I work with the company I work with, Woe Travel,
which is a women's only adventure travel.
Women's only hiking. That's awesome. It stands for Women High on Adventure.
Oh, nice.
And we do international trekking, and it's like different levels. So we always do Kilimanjaro. It's one of our big mountains that we do. But the next adventure, and my favorite adventure that we do, is the next trip that I went on. So when Laura arrived in Tanzania, we were on the same flight, but we ended up in different like lines to get our visas. And she ended up standing next to my boss and friend, Allison, who was there for our annual International Women's Day Summit. And she told Laura all about Woe. And before Laura and I left Tanzania, we were like, okay, next year we're going to Peru with them. And so the following year in May, shortly after my birthday, we went to Peru and hiked the Salcante trek to Machu Picchu, which I actually just got back from there again in April. Nice. It's like my favorite international trek that we do. And I've done it like six times now, I think. I'm really lucky. Yeah. And it's just as beautiful every single time. And we went, and the people that lead our trips are their group adventure leaders, and we work with local partners wherever we go, because the part of what our company is all about is supporting women internationally. So we work with preferably locally owned women owned businesses. Mm-hmm. So in Peru, we work with a company called Mountain Gods Peru, and it's owned and operated by my friend Elizabeth. And the woman that was leading the trip, her name's Amanda, and I was like, how do I get this job? So she was like, you should just apply. Hmm. So I did. And then the following April, I was going back to Peru
so cool.
to lead another trip.
Yeah. What were you doing before that then? Where were you working?
I've been all over the place. I feel like I've lived like 10 lives with jobs. Yeah. So I still do this. I was a nanny for a family of four children.
Hence the name.
Since roamingnanny.com, my website, they started calling me that after I got back from Kilimanjaro. Yeah. Because I did that when they were really little. At the time, they thought it was super cool. They're teenagers now, so I have no idea whether they think I'm cool or not
probably
anymore.
Not.
But they're teenagers. But at the time, they thought that was awesome. So now I'm just like a family assistant. I work with them. And one of them is on the autism spectrum. Okay. So he and I have a very special relationship. That's awesome. Because I've been with him since he was five.
Yeah.
So he's a teenager. And all of them, except the oldest, are all taller than me. Mm. Which isn't hard because I'm only 5'4".
Okay.
I gave myself two extra inches. So it's kind of, I was a nanny, and then I started my blog on the encouragement of the other co-founder of Woe, Danielle, when we were in, we hiked to Everest Base Camp. And I was like, I want to start a blog. I've always been a writer. And she's like, then start it. Hmm. And I'm like, yeah, but, and she like, I remember like sitting in this tea house and her slamming her hand on the table and be like, just start it. Don't think, just do it. And I was like,
oh,
okay. So I got
I'm all
home
about
and
that.
It happened.
Don't think, just do. Yeah,
just do it. Sure. Ask for forgiveness if you need to later, but just go for it.
100%.
Yeah. So it all kind of spiraled in this like really serendipitous way. Like the universe needed to be where I am right now.
Yeah. Okay. And then you created a career and a life all around hiking in the outdoors, which is the dream.
Still blows my mind.
but you used the word lucky, and I don't think that's fair on yourself. I think you've clearly made this happen by just doing it. And you know, just asking for it, which is cool. And I think it's easy to forget that's kind of sometimes not all it takes, but that's where it starts, is just sort of jumping in and saying, I want a job here. I want to work with you. You know, I'm starting, you know, your blog and, the fact that you've got quite a massive following on Instagram is because, you know, looking at your profile, you put out thousands of posts and, you know, you're unique as well in how you do that. And that's really, really interesting. And that's really kind of like kind of guests I love on the show, is people who just have this kind of energy and that really comes across. So,
I'm told that I have,
you have
that
tons
energy,
of it. It's cool.
And it's always strange when people tell me that, cause I'm just like, I don't know. I'm just me, so I don't really see it.
No, I can see it. And I've got that like very standard British amount of energy. It's slightly reserved, but it's there. But, you know, so we don't get it out quite as much. But it is there. But I love it. It's awesome.
I mean, I'm an American. We're just naturally strange.
For sure.
And loud.
Well, you're the first American guest I've had on the show as well. So,
I feel so
you
lucky.
You should. Typically, you know, the show's about UK trails and stuff, and I was like, I'm gonna spread this out and start again. Some overseas.
There are a lot of really great trails in the UK. I've got like, I use for the AT. I use the app Far Out.
Oh yeah.
Do you know this
I don't
app?
Know it.
And there's
we have a bunch. We have Hiker. Have you seen Hiker?
No.
Okay. Andy was on the Hiker podcast. So I'm going to plug him a little bit just now. Hiker is,
it's a great podcast.
Yeah, it's awesome. Andy's podcast is amazing. Hiker is an app. So it's Hiker with two eyes in it.
And
they're blowing up.
Is it cool that I just do this now? Yeah. As you talk, I'm going to
basically
look for
they've
it.
Got they're just putting all the trails everywhere on their app. It's cool. Have download it and it'll blow your mind. You'll love it.
That was easy.
They have a podcast. Cool. They have a podcast as well, run by Owen. Because
you know, I need another hiking.
Yeah, for
podcast
sure, you do. And you need another hiking podcast to get onto. I'm going to message Owen after this and say, get a breather on the show.
<Thank you. laughs>
That's all right. Yeah.
But so Far Out Guides it looks similar to this, but I found out about all the hiking trails in the UK because they're on there.
Are they? Okay. Far Out Guides.
Yeah. If I open Far Out, if I can.
I see it.
It has, they're all in yellow on there.
I see it.
And I was like, well, those look fantastic. Yeah. So clearly the thing with hiking is that once you do one trail, no matter, you're addicted, you're either addicted or you're out. There's usually
no
middle ground.
I think
but
it's
once
more,
you do,
more people to be addicted than out. It's hard not to be.
I think so too. It is. Yeah, but trailblazer. So they're all in like yellow.
Oh yeah, so I
see it.
I'm on the app on my browser.
Yeah,
as well.
So this is Codswald's Way, and there's so many. So I gotta go over the UK and spend like a month or two.
I'm gonna get into that because it was one of my questions. So like, how for you do you think that? And I'm going to get on to the Pacific Crest Trail that you did as well, in a bit.
I did the
AT, sorry.
I mean, I want to do the PCT, but not yet. AT. I have to, heal up.
Okay, cool. So, over here we have loads and loads of trails. Our long-distance trails are a bit different. Our culture's a bit different over here for it as well, because they're smaller, obviously. You know?
Well, they're smaller, and they're usually, like, village to village.
Yeah,
like,
totally. Most
you don't camp, right?
You do. You can't, but you can.
You do camp.
Everybody, a lot of people do. So the disadvantage we have over here is that wild camping is illegal. By illegal, it's a civil offence. It's a civil offence. So the police can't come along and arrest you and take you away. Just the landowner can say, get off my land.
Get out.
Yeah. And then if you refuse to move, then he can go and ring the police and they can come and remove you. But it's a civil offence. However, most landowners, because we have vast stretches of moorland and upland and things, most landowners are not driving around looking for wild campers. So it's very possible to wild camp. We have like a leave no trace because we want people to be very discreet about it so it doesn't cause too much of a kickback. a lot of long distance trails are built on a town to town basis. So there is an option for people to stay in places or camp or do either or. It's very different. But I guess when you did the AT, I gather, like from looking at, for instance, the website The Trek, as an example, I'm sure you know The Trek. Yeah.
Yep.
Like it strikes me there's a really, really big trail community on these trails as people go.
Oh, yeah.
Like that is, and that really comes across from an observation point of view, from listening to The Trek's podcast and looking at the website. And, you know,
they have a good podcast.
Yeah, they do have a good podcast. And listen, you know, watching and seeing people like you, like how, describe to me what that community is. What's the dynamic behind it? Do you walk with the same people throughout? Do you kind of keep on going ahead and then they catch up with you and you kind of just see them bits of the trail? How does it work? And how is it? I don't know if you can describe that, but I'd love to know a bit about how it is, how it is walking, you know, the AT, for example.
Oh, well, the hiking community and I can only speak for like the AT and where I live in Vermont, the Long Trail.
Yeah.
So the Long Trail is the oldest long distance hiking trail in the US.
And how far?
273 miles. Okay. I don't know. It changes a little bit every year. When I did it, it was 273 in 2020. Okay. I section hiked it. Because I was lucky to have still have a job during the pandemic. So I worked like 4 days a week and then I hiked 3 days a week. And then I did like a long section, like a week. At the time, it was a long section towards the end, because I live in southern Vermont and it ends up at Canada. And so it's a long drive to get up there. And so both of them have like very awesome, but they're also very different trail communities, in that there's like in the towns that the trail is near, there's people like doing shuttles that you can like just give them a bit money for, or there's people out going out and doing what's called trail magic, and they'll bring like a bunch of food and they'll just give it to hikers. And there's signs in the town that I live close by, because the Long Trail and Appalachian Trail are, for the first 100 miles of the Long Trail, are the same. So we have signs in towns close by that say hiker friendly. And if I see a sign that says hiker friendly, even when I'm not hiking, I'm going to give them my money, because take my money. Thank you for being part of it.
Yeah, for sure. You want to be there, don't you?
And so I started the Appalachian Trail on March 22nd in 2021 by myself.
Okay.
And I didn't know anyone else that was hiking. I was just like, I'm going to do it, because my whole career when the pandemic hit just like went out the window. When you work in hiking and travel and no one is hiking or traveling internationally, there is no career. So I guess, I mean, the hike itself was a little bit like, this has always been on my bucket list, because I grew up close to the AT, but also like probably some healing too, because the pandemic messed with a lot of us in a lot of different ways. Sure. And I don't care where you are in the world, that's the case.
Yeah.
So
it's hard to avoid it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Do you mind if I ask what it did with you, how you managed with that?
I didn't do great.
Yeah.
I struggle with depression and have my whole life. So like I've been off medication for a real long time. And like when you build up this career, like my blog was making me like a full-time living for the first time since I started it, like 2 months before the pandemic. And like I had just won a writing contest through a safari company, and I won a safari.
Oh wow.
So I was in Kenya when it was all going down, right before the world shut down. Like I got home on March 14th and like flights in and out of the US stopped on the 16th.
Wow.
So it was like, I'm on a high too. Everything sucks.
Yeah. And did that kill the blog as well for that?
It did. Yeah. For really, I'm still recovering.
That's so hard.
So it was very challenging for me, and I was really mad at the world for a while. I was mad at everyone for everything. Like I couldn't go to the grocery store without headphones on, because I live in a pretty affluent area, and there were people that were like, oh, I'm not getting my overtime at work anymore. And I wanted to be like, there were times where I just wanted to turn around at the grocery store and be like, I'm going to ask you to stop talking, because my entire career fell apart. And I'm not even like the worst story that happened, you know, like there are people that lost family members and how's it, like tons and tons and tons of stuff. But in the world that I was occupying at that time, in the headspace that I was in, I literally just couldn't be around people that weren't grateful for what they still had. And like some of the people that live around me still had a lot of things, and they were still complaining about stuff. And that was challenging for me, to say the least.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
So no problem. It got kind of dark sometimes. We're not gonna get in how dark, but it got dark. Okay. And I think the AT definitely like after a month on the trail, since I haven't needed to take my medication, which makes me really happy, because when I need it, I know that I need it, and when I don't, I don't feel like I need to be on it. So that's a personal like journey for me. I'm not like poo-pooing people that need to be on medication for certain things. That's 100% necessary for certain times and certain people. But yeah, I got on the AT, and ironically, I met my my friend, her trail name is Hoagie. She's my trail sister, on day four.
Nice.
We walked through a terrible thunderstorm, not together, separately, but ended up in the same place. And we hiked 500 miles together, and then I got injured and had to take a break, and I would never make anyone or ask anyone to stop hiking. but she kept hiking, and we talked almost every day. We were on the trail, and she finished, I think, like 2 weeks before I did, and came and met me on the trail and brought me like sandwiches and beer, and she trail magicked me real hard. Awesome. But the community is just spectacular. Yeah. Like, you know, like when something goes down on the trail, like, you know what's happening because everyone keeps each other safe. And like, I was hiking in Virginia, and there was this person that hiked with a machete. Mm. And she definitely had some mental health issues and was a bit aggressive towards men specifically. And someone was like, "Hey, do you know who this person is?" And they dropped their name. And I was like, no, I haven't heard of them. And this other hiker told me all about this person. And it was just like, so like when I saw other people, I was like, "Hey, you should know about this person." Mm. And it was just a whole, everybody in what's called like the bubble, the people that you walk around, just knew to be aware of that particular person. Okay. So it's everybody's looking out for everybody. And like, you know, you hear about people that are like, "Ooh, this person's kind of sketchy." Maybe like not camp near them. Yeah. Yeah, and I only interacted with one person where I was just like, "Ooh, you don't give me good vibes. I'm going to," I like walked like an extra like 5 miles one day to avoid them. Oh, really? And then just to not be like in a dangerous position. But I mean, the hiking community is just so caring and loving for the most part. Like 98% of people are out there like on their own journey. They want to be part of the community. They want that community to be a safe one. You know, we celebrate when people get like do awesome things and like overcome like injuries, or, you know, there's lots of different stories from my time on the trail where you celebrate people making the right decision for them, or, you know, going above and beyond for somebody else. And it's not even the hikers themselves. It's the like the past hikers. Like, I can't wait till the Appalachian Trail bubble reaches up here in like end of June into July. I'm going to do so much trail magic. I'm going to give so many rides. Like, when I see hikers in town, I pull over. I'm like, "Hey, do you need a ride somewhere?" And I did it before I hiked the AT too. And it's, you know, it's all about having what I like to call positive hiker karma. Because when you do good things for hikers, when you go hiking, good things happen to you too. So it's all about a give and take on the trail, I guess.
What is it that you think, or what number of things is it that you think makes that community special, that kind of binds you together?
I don't know. The fact that people, like, you know, you meet someone and you take them at face value. Mm. Like, so I met a guy on the trail whose trail name is Upchuck. He got to the top of Blood Mountain in Georgia and threw up and was Upchuck ever since. And Upchuck is from a completely different background than I am. Politically, we are exact opposites. And yet he is someone on the trail that I knew would have my back. Mm. No question. Like, we hiked, I don't even know how many miles. I met Upchuck in Virginia, and I hiked with him until Vermont, on and off. And he was just a good time. Mm. And I love that, like, on trail, it doesn't matter like where you came from or what you've done before. It's like who you are in that moment. And that's like a really special thing.
Cool. Good answer. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So I had a question and I've just lost it. And this is cool. Yeah. I know. So I heard that happened to you on the on Andy's podcast, and like,
like sometimes I get going and then nothing.
This is gone. Yeah. So I had one guest on where I had a question. It was a really good one. I lost it, and then by trying to work out what the question was, it just all went blank for about 5 minutes, and it was the worst. I remember editing the episode, and I think it was even more awkward to edit it because I just had to listen to my awkwardness of my awkward silence. And I just went completely blank.
Yeah.
Anyway. So
it happens to the best of us.
I was going to ask, how does hiking a long distance trail like the AT change you? Because it is a different experience to hiking our trails here, which are shorter, and you can fit most of our trails into a week of hiking.
Yeah.
Of course, a lot of people do circumference of the UK, so you can walk around the whole of the UK.
you can do Land's End to John O'Groats, you know, so the length of it. There's low, and you can a lot of our trails, you can do sections of them. And obviously we've got Europe as well, which is very accessible. Less so these days. We'll get into that, but it's very accessible.
That's a different story.
It's still there. It's, you know, it's geographically still there. But it is a different experience. You know, it can be a holiday going for a hike, but doing something like the AT, obviously some people will do it in sections and do it in, you know, take a week out to do bits of it at a time. But overwhelmingly, there's this whole amazing, you know, community giving out trail magic and, you know, got trail angels and there's a whole bunch of love on the trail. You must come away from that being feeling like a totally different person. There must be some sort of transformation. Is that very much the case for you? Or how did it change you?
Oh gosh, I knew eventually, like doing some podcasts, someone would ask me this question, and I don't know the answer.
That's cool.
Because so I've been like so far behind on my blog, and I'm like just finishing up putting my. So every day on the trail, I wrote a journal.
Okay.
And some days it was like this long, drawn out, like beautiful thing. Yeah. And some days like, today sucks. I have nothing to say. And I literally put that. And on other days, it's just like a few sentences of like things that I did. Mm. And I'm in the process of going through photos. And hopefully by the end of today, the main journal will be up. But I was reading through like my last week. So I ended in Maine. And before you hit Mount Katahdin, you walk through the 100-mile wilderness. And I was with my buddy Vista, who is currently in Colorado. She's hiking the Continental Divide Trail now. I'm so jealous that I'm not out there too. And she, you know, we were having our, like one of our last dinners together, but we could see like the base of Katahdin, the top of what was in the clouds. And I was like, you know, a lot of people say like that this whole thing changes them, but like, I don't know if it has changed me or like changed their life. Like hiking changed my life is like what people say. Yeah. And I guess it has changed like the trajectory of my life. But she said something that I'll like never really forget. And it's like, I don't think you and I are the type of people that like hiking is going to change things. And I still, like, I agreed with her in that moment. And I still agree with her, but I don't know why. But I also like coming home, it's been, I think I looked it up today before we got on. I think it's like 249 days since I finished the AT. And I still can't. I'm trying to write a book, which has been a disaster because, like, I know what to say, but don't. And, like, you know, books have to have, like, a topic, right? That, like, everything centers around. But when you don't have a topic, I don't really know where to go.
Okay.
So, I'm still trying to figure out, like, I know it's changed me. Like, I know it's made me more patient because I have never been a patient person. I know it's made me, strange enough, quieter. Like, I know that, like, listening to this, everybody in the UK that's listening to me, like, that is just a loud American girl. But, like, it's made me, like, softer spoken. Mm. Like, as in, like, I don't need to have a say in every conversation anymore. Mm. Where, like, before I was like, I need to say my opinion constantly. And where I'm like, I'm a little bit more reflective now. Or, you know, I just don't need to talk all day. Before, like, I was very, very chatty. And I still am. But, like, I loved that, like, I would get up in the morning, chat with whoever I was hiking with, and then walk for, like, 3 hours and not speak to anyone. Like, I loved that. And, yeah, I wish I had a better answer for you how it's changed me. But it has. But I, like, I don't think I've been away from it long enough to, like, pinpoint what. Mm. Like, it's just more peaceful. Like, existence is easy. Mm. Like, I didn't know really what was going on with the world all summer. For 188 days, I didn't know what was going on with the world. And, like, I feel like I was so much happier in my heart because I didn't hear all the negative things that were going on in the world. Mm. I just heard the positive things that were happening to people on the trail.
Without intruding on your experience of the trail, and just listening to it, it sounds to me like what you may have got out of it, which is probably what I think I'd get out of doing a similar experience, is just becoming more present, I guess.
I mean, yes, definitely. Because I loved the everyday monotony of, Like I wake up and I'm in a different place. And I walked, like, I like still have those moments where like, I'm like, I walked that. Like I remember one night I was in Vermont and I had just come off like a 3-day stint at home, which if you're doing a long trail, especially a really long one, and you walk by your house, don't stay for 3 days. You won't want to leave. I had to force myself to get back on the trail. And 2 days later I was in, Rutland, Vermont, and they have, an inn called the Inn at Long Trail. And there's an Irish pub in the basement.
Okay.
I grew up in Massachusetts, and I don't know if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see my face. It's very Irish looking. I'm half Irish, very proudly. And so we went to the pub, and there was like good food, and there was a band there, and they were singing that 500 miles. I would walk 500 miles. Yeah, that song that you can never get out of your head. And they're like, "This is for the hikers." And I remember like we were wasted. And I was like, I didn't walk 500 miles to get here. And we knew how far we had walked. And like, it was just one of those things where like, I yelled it and looked at my friends. And was like, guys, we walked here. Like, that's crazy. And just so like, it's still not like sticking in my mind. I'm like, yeah, I walked that far. Like when I look at a map, I'm like, damn, I look at a map above my like computer here of the whole world, and I look at the section of the U.S. that I hiked, and I was like, "That's a lot."
That's a lot of walking. And how long did it take you to walk? What was the time scale from starting to finishing?
It was 188 days, wow. And I didn't walk every day.
Yeah,
because I took 0 days to rest, and I was in different places at certain times because I had shin splints when I was in early Virginia.
So zero days are the name. For a rest day, 0 days.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it's a rest cool. day, yeah. So a 0 day is 0 miles.
Okay.
And then I was up in New Hampshire, and leaving Vermont, I was walking with my buddy Vista, and we were chatting, and I tripped over, like, a rock that was, like, teeny tiny. Mm. And I sprained my ankle. And, like, I heard the pop when it happened. I went down hard. Ooh. And it was on like a hill too. And I used to play roller derby. So I like,
oh yeah,
those you know, like roller derby yeah. falling skills yeah. like came in handy with my little, with my fall there. If not, I would have ass over tea kettle down this right. hill. And yeah, we stopped. We were like going to the bottom of the hill to have lunch. And after the pain subsided and I stopped pounding the ground, I was like, yeah, we're gonna have lunch right here. That's cool, right? And I didn't even... We had 10 more miles to make that day because we had like 15 to 20 to get into the next town. Mm-hmm. I didn't even take off my shoe when it happened. I was like, if I take it off, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get it back on. So I remember hiking the 15, 20 miles to the next town and taking a rest day and like icing it and like ice and heat and the swelling went down and like I could walk and I was like, oh, this is great. And then after that, you enter the White Mountains, which is one of the hardest stretches of the trail. Mm. And we went up Mount Moosilak, and then going down, it's super steep and you're next to a waterfall. So everything's wet and I was overcompensating and then my knee started to hurt. Ah. So I was in shout out to the Notch Hostel in North Woodstock, Vermont. They let me do work for stay there. And like, I was there for a week and a half and that saved my hike because I got to rest and not. And just not hike. Yeah. And it's just, yeah. So props to them. I'm actually going back there at the end of June to do some hiking over there and see everybody that works there because they were just fantastic humans. Ah, so
amazing. The community sounds incredible in the US.
Yeah. It's one
sounds
of the best.
Super special.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if it's like that. I know like in certain parts of like the PCT, it is. Hmm. And the hiker community as a whole is really tight because like, you know, I left the AT. And I'm a member of the Outdoor Writers Association of America, and they were having their annual conference in Vermont, in upstate Vermont. So I was off the AT for 4 days, and then I went to the conference. And it was my first, like, I had to buy new professional clothes because none of my clothes fit anymore because I lost so much weight. Right. Like, my professional clothes were, like, dripping off me. Like, this is not a good look. So I like, had to go to the store and get a couple new pairs of clothes. And I went there and I was just, you know, I had never been to a conference. It was my first time going to one of those with them, and I was a new member. And I met a guy there, and he's like, "Oh, I hiked it in the 90s," and we instantly had a connection. Because the way you hike is different, what you're carrying is different, navigation is different, the community is different, but it's still at its core, like, the exact same. And that is just like, so really cool.
Yeah,
it makes me so happy. Yeah. That like, I know that I'm gonna meet AT hikers that I didn't hike, that I didn't meet on the trail, that like they hiked 20 years before me or 20 years after me. And we're still gonna have that like connection. Sure. That the AT is just a magical place.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. So I mean, I think what the bit you've just spoken about the AT is going to be really interesting to people listening to this, because as I said, we have a very different experience of the trail here, and we have a community, but because it's not such a long drawn out in a bad way, but it's not, our trails aren't quite so long. The community doesn't have quite the same way to build the momentum as people go through.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that being said, you know, we meet people on the trail and in the countryside, but you're not sharing such a prolonged experience with one another, so it's not quite the same. But you know, there is definitely that sense, that trail magic and that culture from the US that creeps over here, and I've noticed that culture here in particular is changing, and especially in terms of people being interested in long distance hiking as mm-hmm. you know, a hobby that they can do just to switch off and get away from, you know, reality for a little bit, which is, well, long distance hiking is more reality than, you know, working a cubicle for most people, but you know what I mean?
That's true.
Yeah.
it's a real life experience. Exactly, as yeah. opposed to sitting
yeah,
at a desk.
Precisely. Yeah. So I wanted to get into, women in the outdoors. Now, as a male, I'm, you know, very fortunate that it's very accessible for me. The gear's readily available. There's plenty of people who look exactly like me, beards, you know, medium, 5'9". I'm like the typical kind of model of guy in the outdoors.
Well done.
Yeah,
good job.
Really, I've done really good with that. And I've
nothing,
tried.
And there's nothing yeah. wrong with that. Like, that needs to be said, sure. too. Yeah. There's nothing wrong. Yeah. Well, because people like have this, like,
they have
guilt
an
of, like, I'm taking up
yeah,
all the space.
I'm not apologetic for yeah. it. I'm, you know, I'm lucky that I'm, you know, the experience is built for people like me. You are challenging that. And without sort of chiming in with my experience of it, because I don't think that's particularly healthy and helpful for me to do, because my experience is my experience, I'd love to know what you're doing and your kind of viewpoints on women and adventure, and, you know, how your platform and your blog and the company you work for all sort of come together to allow you to share that message. Kind of, if wasn't really a question, but I just love to know about your experience.
No.
Yeah. I'll let you carry on, because I think you know what I'm trying to get to, but I'm just asking the question really badly.
It's okay. Yeah. We're going to get there. That's
cool.
That's all
right. It's a destination that counts.
And yeah, I mean, I said it before, like, I've always found that the woods is a safe space for me, because going to Girl Scout camp was the first place that I could truly be myself. So I don't know. And when I said that earlier, I was like, that's the correlation that I haven't found yet, but that's the truth. Like, the outdoors has always been a safe place for me, because it's where I can be myself.
Yeah.
And if people don't like it, well, but because of that, and because I haven't had negative interactions with people as a woman in the woods, I have a lot of confidence going into it. I also have had outdoor skills since I was about 10 years old, if not younger.
Yeah.
So like, that's a lot of privilege on my part too, where I was, you know, in the woods and I was learning these things at a young age. But I think what a lot of men specifically don't realize is that the experience is much different, because like, a lot of men on the trail, like, especially if you're doing a long distance hike, like, I listened to a ton of audiobooks last summer. Like, I had like a playlist that, like, when I was having a bad day, I would put it in. But like, I passed a lot of men that had two headphones in, and I never passed a woman that had two headphones in. She always had one in. And that's like that's a thing that we're taught, like, even in a city, like, as a woman, like, you don't walk around with two headphones, and you never know who's coming up behind you. Like, you need to hear what's going on all around you. And like, you know, mansplaining is a really big thing that happens, because I'm 5'2". I'm 36 years old, but I look like I'm in my 20s. So everyone just assumes that I don't know what I'm doing. Mm. But I can tell you with a lot of the people that I met on the AT, I had a lot more experience than other people did. Like, I remember on, I don't know, like day two or three. Well, the first day I met my friend John, whose trail name is Hangry Hatter. Okay. He does not like to not eat.
Okay.
and he has a lot of hiking experience, but didn't know how to hang like a bear hang. Because when you're camping, you have to secure your food so the bears don't get it. So I was teaching him and these other two guys that they were all like, I don't know, say in their 40s or 50s. Really, really nice guys. And I go and I'm trying to teach them how to do it. And the first time, like you tie like a rock bag, a little tiny bag with some rocks in it to some paracord, and you throw it up and over a branch that's tall enough to secure your food.
Sure.
You can look it up on the internet. I can't explain.
I know exactly what you mean. It's the same.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's
okay.
The same way you get a rope over a tree, for instance. You'd have to throw something.
Exactly.
Then you pull it through and it kind of follows. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I just, for the people listening, like it's not a visual. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm teaching him how to do that. And this other guy comes up and I missed it the first time because sometimes it's hard. And I did it once. He goes, oh, let me get you that. And my friend John was like, no, she knows what she's doing. She's teaching us how to do it. He goes, yeah, but I can do it. And I looked at him, I'm like, I don't need you to help me. I know how to do this. Mm. And then as I did the second time and got it over, and I'm doing it, and I'm teaching them. And then he just kept on butting in and trying to mansplain to me that what I was doing was wrong. And there's all kinds of theories and like opinions on securing food and how to do it. But that's not the point that I'm trying to make here.
Sure.
What I was trying to show these guys was the PCT hang. Which is like when you're hanging is the most effective way to hang. And he just assumed that I didn't know what I was doing. And that was the first time in many times along the trail that just some man assumed that I didn't know what I was doing.
So,
and it's frustrating.
Yeah. So my understanding of that, to clarify, is that had you been a guy with a guy on the trail and you were showing another guy how to hang
He probably wouldn't have walked over,
but you're a female on the trail showing a guy how to do that. And he felt the need to walk over. Okay.
Yeah. And it wasn't like I am always willing to learn new skills and that there are people that have knowledge that I don't have because skills are always changing and someone might know this really amazing trick that I don't know. Hmm. I learned a bunch of cool things on the AT from other hikers, but the way that he came about it was just very like condescending. Mm. Like, you don't know anything, little girl. Like, I felt like he was like verbally patting me on the head and telling me I was cute and to smile. So and that happened quite a bit on the trail, and I think it happens a lot, and it deters women from going out and doing things because they don't want to have that experience. Mm. So something that I'm working on right now on my blog, and I'm like halfway. There's a lot of work that goes into it, and I'm giving myself a new title, which I've never done before.
Okay.
It's called Backpacking Coach.
Okay.
And I am working this year to help as many women and beyond to help as many women to get outside and go backpacking and have the skills and confidence to do it on their own or with a group of friends that are women.
Yeah.
And so hopefully by the end of the summer and through the winter, I can perfect it, have a like a online backpacking course, like a 2-hour thing, and then like a whole big book with like a PDF book with videos and links and all kinds of information so women specifically, anybody can do it, but I'm targeted more towards women, can go out and have the confidence to do it themselves. So I think that we're more capable than a lot of us think we are, but the confidence of I don't know what I'm doing and someone's going to mansplain me or someone's going to hurt me or, a bear. It's all the unknowns like any other backpacker. But I feel like with women, they're amplified because we're told it's not safe. Like the number of times on the trail that like I was asked, are you by yourself?
Mm.
And I would very proudly say, yeah, I am. Unless they were sketchy, then I didn't. But like I had all these safety precautions in place for myself. And I was usually meeting up with a friend later on at camp. So if I didn't show up, they would know something went down.
Hmm.
There's more women need to hear that women go out and do these things on their own.
Yeah.
And if I can, like, it's like with that little girl that we talked about earlier, if I can be that woman that's out here being like, you can do it too. And it goes for women of any size and shape and color. I don't care where you're from or what you think you can accomplish. If you have the drive to be a long distance hiker or a weekend hiker, doesn't matter. A hiker is a hiker, no matter whether you're doing 5 miles or 1,000 miles.
Oh, totally.
There's no, yeah. It bothers me when people are like, oh, you haven't done a long hike. Mm. Oh, are you really a hiker? Yes, you are a hiker. Yeah, 100%. And anyone that says other ways can shove it. I just don't like that at all. Everyone that hikes is a hiker.
Totally, yeah.
And it's, yeah. So I'm hoping that more women will get out there and like be confident to say that they're out there and bring a friend. And I'm trying my best to make that happen with as many women as possible.
Nice. And have you had any experiences where you've seen, beyond this little girl that you met on the trail, but have you had any experiences where you've seen women who previously, you know, were very new to the outdoors and unsure about it, to suddenly really embracing the outdoors kind of in your company? So through the business that you work with or otherwise?
Yeah. I've had several, but I'm going to talk about my girl Hoagie, my trail sister. She had never really done any long distance hiking before the Appalachian Trail. And so she had all her gear. She knew how to use it, which is so important when starting any type of hike, whether it be a weekend or a long distance hike, and or just a day hike. Like if you don't know how to use trekking poles, you should probably learn how to use them before you get out there. But she was really new to the experience. And I remember we met up with this other woman named Iris, and we became a little trail family for a while. We called ourselves SEAL Team 3. Hmm. And Iris was really good at starting campfires. She hiked really fast. We called her our vibe curator. So she was always the first one to camp. She'd pick us a really awesome campsite and then she'd start a fire. And like, she had when I showed up, cause I was the slowest of the three of us, like the whole camper, like SEAL Team 3 vibe was like in full effect.
That's awesome.
And there was, it's so great. And there was one time where we had all hiked together one day, I think. Mm. And Hoagie was like, I've never started a campfire before. And we're like, okay, so you're going to start the campfire today. And we gave her some pointers and like we collected all this wood for her. And I got to watch my really good friend start her very first campfire. And like, that's a really cool experience to like see your friend who was like, hey, I don't really know if I can do it. And we're like, you can. And like, I'm the type of person that's like, I have to like check myself when I'm teaching things. Cause I just want to like go in and help. But I like really stepped back and I was like, hey, try that. And then she did. And eventually it took her a little while, but it worked because starting a campfire is challenging the first time you do it. And I actually saw her a couple weekends ago and we were talking about, I had started a fire with somebody else and she now works for the company that I work for. And it was like a summer camp weekend that we did. And my boss came up and they're like, wow. She was like, wow, that's a great campfire. I don't think she knew that I could start fires. Hmm. And she's like, Hoagie, did you start that fire? She's like, oh no, Retha did. She goes, but like Retha taught me how to start my first campfire. So, and like, it was just a really great like moment to be like, I forgot that I had, and I was like, oh yeah, I did. But just to see women, I had a woman on a trip in, I think it was 2019. She was like, I was in her like 50s, I think. And the second day of the Salkante trek in Peru is really challenging. It's, you go up for about an hour and the rest of the day is all downhill. And it's pretty steep in sections and it's rocky and you just get exhausted. And you can actually start breathing because you're coming down from altitude. Mm. And we get to camp and we have two guides, and we have a guide in the front and the guide in the back for safety. And I kind of like was in the middle, but this woman fell behind quite a ways. And like everybody was like relaxing and changing into their camp clothes and done for the day. And she hadn't showed up to camp. And I kept like going back to the road from our campsite to check her, to check if she was coming. And eventually one of the times I was over there, she was coming and I just stood there. And I remember like putting my arms out in front of me and like looking at her and being like, I am so proud of you. And I gave her this really big hug, and we always get like evals back. Hmm. From all the clients. And she said that moment, like the fact that I was standing there waiting for her to come back, like really made a difference in her day, because it was a very challenging day for her and she didn't know that she could do it. And like, just me saying those words, and I genuinely was really proud of her. That is a very challenging day, and it's my least favorite day of the whole hike too. So it was just a really great moment to like experience someone doing something they weren't sure that they could complete. And, you know, I'm all about women supporting women. That's kind of my vibe.
Yeah.
So I love seeing women accomplish things that they weren't sure that they could. It's cool.
As a guy, as I say, you know, I'm experienced in the outdoors. I'm very fortunate to be able to be comfortable. I can run in the woods, you know, at night where I live without feeling scared or fearful. You know, in the winter when it's dark and raining, it doesn't faze me. And I'd imagine that that's not the same if you're female. You wouldn't want to be running through the woods near where I live with your headphones on, not being bothered about, you know, who might be coming up behind you on a motorbike or something. But as a guy as well who has that, it allows me to be very ignorant to really what the experience that others are going to have in the outside, that women are going to have in the outside. What I never ever want to do is put a woman in the position where she feels for instance, may have mansplained something to her or made her feel belittled in that context of the outdoors. So what is it really, I guess I'm asking, is what can men do to help with the problem? What can we do to make women feel more comfortable in the outdoors, to not make women feel like they've been kind of mansplained to?
Yeah.
Could you kind of help me with that question, I guess, and anybody else who might be listening, who might be thinking, well, I feel I can't say anything now because I'm scared of giving the wrong impression, or I'm scared of leaving somebody feeling, you know, that way from, you know, my interaction with her, for instance.
Yeah. I joke, I was in a wilderness first aid class recently. I was getting my research, and I thought I knew the answer to the question. So I was agreeing. I was like, yeah, I think that's right. And the instructor agreed with me, but we were both wrong.
Yeah.
And he goes, Retha, I really thought that we were right because you were so confident. Yeah. And I looked right at him. I looked him straight in the eye, and he was a straight white man. Yeah. And I said, well, I decided recently, thanks to Mindy Kaling saying this in one of her books, that I've decided to approach the world with the confidence of a straight white man. Everybody else laughed. He didn't think it was funny. But that's the reality of the world, is that as a woman, I feel like a lot of times, and not all men do this, and I'm not like men bashing because
no,
together,
course.
Yeah.
I think most
men
want to.
Oh, no, but I feel like I need to say this to people that are listening.
Yeah, most men don't want to be part of the problem. Like, I think most guys, if you say to me as a guy, if I say we're on the trail together and I, you know, came up to you and explained something to you and it came across in that way where, you know, you felt that I had mansplained something to you, like, I know my experience would be mortified that you felt that way. And I think most guys are the same. They don't want to be that guy, if that makes sense.
And, oh, no, it 100% does. But I think that the best way to not be that guy is to, like, if you see, like, we all struggle with things, right? Regardless of man, woman, whatever. Non-binary person. But if you come up to me and just assume that you can just jump in and fix my problem, I think that's like a good thing. Like walking up instead of being like, oh, let me help you with that. And like explaining why, and be like, do you need help with that? Can I help you?
That's
Because I think that's, I feel like that like gives, I mean, I wouldn't walk up to anyone and just assume they wanted my help. And I think that's the, what's the right word? The difference between when I've been mansplained to, like, he just assumes that I don't know what I'm doing, as opposed to being like, hey, you know, I see you didn't make that, get that rope over the branch. Can I help you? And I would just very kind of say, like, no, I'm going to try it again. I do this all the time, but, you know, sometimes you miss. And just, like, giving someone the opportunity to – and I think this goes for anyone in the hiking community. You know, just don't assume that I don't know what I'm doing in the woods, because I feel like that's a lot of – I feel like that's, like, a lot of women's fears, that, like, if I look like I don't know what I'm doing, if I mess up, someone's going to think I don't belong here.
Yeah.
I think that's like access for the woods for, I don't think that's a thing for women, just women either. I think it's a hiking and wilderness access problem. Like, people don't want other hikers and backpackers and adventurers to think that they don't know what they're doing. Mm. Like, you know, when you, I feel like a lot of access problems for people of color, that I've been told, this is not me assuming, are like, when you don't have the right gear, you don't feel like you belong.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, when you don't know the answer to every outdoor question, you don't feel like you belong. Yeah. And when you're just learning how to be in the woods, like when someone just comes up and just starts helping you because they don't think you know what you're doing, like that's not a great feeling. Mm. And so I guess, I mean, I know that was a very long answer with lots of examples, but like, just ask, like, can I help you with that? Do you need help? As opposed to just going and helping, like, oh, I see you're having, are you struggling with your fire? Like, or not even saying struggling, like, do you need help with your campfire? Mm. Because make me observation of like, oh, you're struggling with your fire. Like, clearly, so, you don't know what you're doing.
Rather than going, hey, let me show you how to do that. Just, hey, how are you doing? Do you want a hand with anything?
Hey. Do you need a hand?
Like you, yeah.
What can I help you with?
I'm really glad I asked that because
I am too.
Yeah. I think that definitely my experience has been, I never want to make anybody feel like I've done that. And I don't think, I'm sure there are times in my life as a guy I have left a woman feeling that way.
We all
like
make for sure.
Exactly.
We
it's all in a learning curve. But I guess why I was asking that question, because I'm pretty sure that the majority of people who are out in the outdoors are lovely folks who want to have that
amazing, and they just want to be helpful.
And they just want to be helpful. And if that allows somebody to ask the question the right way, when the intention is right, which I hope it usually is, then that'd be awesome. So hopefully that helps somebody. Definitely helped me.
Yeah. I don't doubt that all the people that asked me or like mansplained to me on the trail were being mean about it. That was not, I don't think that was their intention anyway. They just want to be helpful. Yeah. So, and because the community is so gracious, but it's hard to like be in that instance and be like, please stop mansplaining. Yeah. Like, I don't want to be rude.
Of course.
But I also like want to be treated like I know what the hell I'm
doing. And then you don't want to say, please stop mansplaining, because that then puts them on the back foot and they'll be like, well, not stop mansplaining. And you cause,
I don't want to start a confrontation. Of course you don't. Yeah. I don't want to be rude. Yeah. Like, it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, like I have gotten to the point now where I'm saying like, no, thank you. I know what I'm doing. Mm. And I just leave it at that. Yeah. And someone can judge me if they don't think I know what I'm doing or not. Because I think a lot of issues that I had growing up, like being a woman, is I was always like, well, you need to be polite. Mm. Like, women are polite. Mm. And like, I don't always need to be polite to everyone if I feel someone is like overstepping or, you know, being rude. Mm. And whether it's being rude or not, I don't want to like be, I don't want to be the rude person, but I also need to stand my ground and be like, I know what I'm doing. I have the confidence to do this on my own. Yeah. Thank you.
Brilliant. Well, really glad I asked that. And I think that's a fantastic place to finish.
Don't be rude in the woods.
Yeah, be nice.
Thanks for coming.
Be nice in the woods. It's the takeaway. It's also a really good clip to put right at the beginning of the podcast. So right at the beginning of my shows, I take a little snippet out of the podcast, about 20 seconds long, stick at the beginning. So the bit that,
oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's great. I think it makes people go,
they're waiting to hear.
I want to hear that bit. And if it's right at the end, always a good sign, because they've got to wait all the way to the end to get to this bit.
That's really going
to
help with the algorithm.
For sure. I think it does. It does get quite a good listen time. I think that probably helps. So yeah, it's been really nice to speak to you. Congratulations, as I say, the first guest from the USA on the show. First of many, I hope. I'll finish on this. So where can people find you online? Where's the best place to look to learn more about you?
So my website is roamingnanny.com.
Yep.
And you can find me on Roaming Nanny on all the things. On Instagram, on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I don't really use it that much. Hmm. I started a TikTok, but I don't get it. So really, like, Facebook and Instagram. Start there.
Nice. Okay. Brilliant. So Roaming
Nanny. I'm too old for TikTok.
Yeah,
I feel that.
I've been told I should be on TikTok. I can't dance. And I just don't want to do it. It's addictive when you're on it. Go. But in terms of putting myself out.
Oh, it is. I had to delete it off my phone.
I have as well.
I couldn't.
I put it on my phone a few times and I've you kind of think, I can handle this. Like, I'm not going to look at this every 2 seconds. Give it a day. It's just like,
I'm not an adulty enough adult to handle that.
Exactly the same. Yeah. I have to have timers on my phone to stop me using Instagram and stuff. I have to block it out. And then,
yeah, I do too. Addictive. It happens. Yeah, you know, cool. We're not perfect.
But anyway,
they are designed to be addictive.
They are, exactly. Yeah. So, Roman Nanny. And yeah, brilliant. So, it's been amazing to have you on today. Thank you so much for joining me. Hopefully, have you on again soon, because I do have more questions I'd love to ask you as well. I think there is more to talk about. So, but no.
Well, I'm going hiking later this summer. I'm doing the Northville Placid Trail up in the Adirondacks in New York. And then, hopefully the Trans-Catalina Trail on Catalina Island in California later this year.
Wicked.
But next year I'm doing another big hike. I'm doing the Camino de Santiago. I'm doing the
French hike. Oh, are you? Nice.
Yeah. So it'll be my first hut to hut experience, really.
Cool.
Like I did the O Circuit in Chile last year and this year for work.
Yeah.
But it'll be my first time actually staying in places where I can get a shower every day.
Brilliant. Oh, I can't wait to see you.
Sleep in a bed.
Can't wait to follow you when you're doing that. Super exciting.
It's going to be next May and June, I think.
Amazing. So amazing. You should tie it.
This time next year, I will be there.
Yeah, wicked. Tie it into a trip to the UK as well.
Sounds good.
Yeah, you should do that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm always looking for reasons to go everywhere. So.
Amazing. All right. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Welcome back. Thank you so much for enjoying the show or listening to the show. I'm assuming you enjoyed it. I hope you did. I really enjoyed speaking with Rita. She was a great guest to have on. The kind of guests I really like on the show is when I can just sit back and they just do all the talking, which was very much happened to Rita. It was great. So Rita, you're welcome on any time. If you just want to sit and talk for an hour on my show, be my guest, because, you know, that was awesome. I really do like chatty guests who just roll with it. That really just makes things easy for me, makes for an easy conversation. So a pleasure to have you on, and I hope everybody listening really enjoyed the show. If you did enjoy the show, just jump onto my inbox. You can email me at matthew@distancehiker.com, or you can find me on Instagram or Facebook, where you can DM me through Distance Hiker. You know how to get a hold of me right now if you're a listener to the show. And thank you for those of you who have been getting in touch with me over the last few weeks. It's really nice to start hearing from some listeners of the show. But I will leave it there for now. So if you just want to find Aretha as well online, you can do so by searching for Roaming Nanny, and her page will come up, or just type in roamingnanny.com. Or you can search her by searching for her name on Instagram, which is Aretha Charette, and that'll link you out to all of her things she's up to as well. So that is it for this week. I look forward to bringing you another guest in a couple of weeks' time. But for now, whatever you're doing, have fun, enjoy the cooking, the drive to work, the run, the lying in bed listening to my tones ring through your ears. Whatever you're doing as you listen to the show, and wherever you are, I hope you're having a great day, and I look forward to speaking to you again real soon.